correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to Me and Steve Talk RPGs, a podcast where me and my friend Steve try and help you get the most out of your role-playing game experience.
Hey folks, what's up? Welcome back to Me and Steve Talk RPGs. I'm Steve. Over there, Steve.
And I'm Steve. Yep. Over here, Steve.
We're going to talk some RPGs. We're actually going to continue the topic we promised last week.
Right.
We actually have a plan, so this can only go downhill from here.
Right.
But before we do that, what are we going to shout out today? We doing Gamer Nation Con again, or?
Well, we can. I might as well put my bad news out there. So as much as I've been excited to come to Gamer Nation Con, due to unforeseen and unfortunate circumstances, that is not happening for me. But it can happen for you.
You only get to meet one Steve if you go. Well, there may be Steves there.
Well,
in fact, trying to remember. Yes, Brett is an honorary Steve now. So technically, you can meet two Steves.
Yeah. So we'll put Brett in my stead.
And actually, you know what? Technically, now Chris is an honorary Steve, too.
Correct. So we can put Chris in my stead.
Yes. And
but
JT,
yeah, Gamer Nation Con.
JT will be there. Yep. He's an honorary Steve.
There's a lot of honorary Steves.
Right?
He might not be yet.
I think he's I think he's been on three times.
Oh, has he?
I think. I don't remember.
Oh, man, we've been doing this for too long.
But yes, Gamer Nation Con, April 4th through the... I got to open a calendar here. Hang on.
It's April 4th through the 8th. Through the 7th.
Yes, April 4th through the 7th. Dallas Games Marathon, Plano, Texas, which is in greater Dallas area. Mm-hmm. 4 days of gaming goodness, lots and lots of games of all kinds, board games, RPGs, may even be some people playing card games there. I don't know 100%. People probably bring stuff. I know last year there was just people playing something everywhere all the time.
That is absolutely correct. And it is a great time, and I'm very bummed out that I can't go. It is, you know, life.
Yes, so, I'm disappointed in you not to be able, but, you know, sometimes life just does things that aren't happy.
No, trust me. If I could circumvent the circumstances, I would have a long time ago, but unfortunately, circumstances as they stand, I am not able to.
Well, we will game in your memory, in your absence. Something,
game in my stead.
Yes, there we go.
Well, with all that being said, let's go ahead and move into our topic, which is a continuation of a topic we were talking about. Yawning.
The opposite of
about. We were talking about action and intrigue. And so this is the action part of that conversation.
Yes.
So where we left off last week is I had given myself and you some homework, and I completely failed my homework.
Well, I didn't actually do any either, so.
Yeah, fair enough. Everything I started looking into that I was like, ooh, just action scene, had intrigue in it. Like, oh no.
Well, conversely, I had a realization today, actually, to the inverse of that.
Okay.
So to back up, the supposition we were going to argue about was my statement that I think you can have intrigue alone, but action alone is not really tenable. And I realized that while I think that does hold true for a long form game, for something short term, say a one shot, that's not necessarily the case. Exhibit A being Havoc Brigade.
Which we played last night, which is fun.
And I was running.
Oh, I love Havoc Brigade. It's such a fun. Last night was so chaos and fun and such a good time.
And really, I think the only intrigue in Havoc Brigade is just how high will the dumbness and tomfoolery escalate. Like, and I say that with all the love in the world to the crew playing it, because it's a blast. We're having a ball. you know, but there's no story, not really. There's a goal, sort of, but you guys have managed to like thwart yourselves in almost every turn somehow.
Who needs any form of transportation? We have managed to destroy every form of transportation we've come in contact with. We don't need to travel long distances. No, we just need to walk.
But that being said, right, Havoc Brigade, and it even says it in the game itself, is only intended as a one shot. In fact, Grant Howen actually recommends trying to keep sessions to 3 hours because it can be kind of an overload going much past that. You know, I've taken it to about 4 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've managed to string this entire campaign, this one shot, into about 4 sessions.
Right, but we're playing like hour and a half at a clip.
Yeah, so yeah, fair enough. It's hard for us because it is only a limited amount of time to herd the cats.
Mm-hmm. In a game that is specifically designed for the cats to run everywhere.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, I really enjoy that game because it is chaos. It is just do what you want to do. What do you want to do? What do you think you would do?
And although I am mildly something at the fact that I got called out for turning things dark by the way we handled using the goblin to block the portcullis. Especially considering the person who said that's first experience, our introduction was me running Delta Green for them.
Yeah, I don't know how. I it got dark, but it didn't, like, and it got comically dark. If that makes sense.
That was my intention.
I got where you were going with it. I got what you were trying to do by, like, explaining what you had explained. I think it just maybe caught him a little off guard. if that's maybe the terminology for that. But
that's,
yeah,
possible. All-purpose goblin eating.
All-purpose goblin eating. Oh, yeah, Havoc Brigade is such a great, great game.
Yes. On the subject of GNC, I'm working up a Lord of the Rings themed version of Havoc Brigade. I have a character list. I just need to fill out make out the sheets.
Nice.
Which is a little tougher than I thought, in a way, because Lord of the Rings inherently has some seriousness to it, and that is one thing. I'm not saying you couldn't play Havoc Brigade more serious, but it is not intended to be that way. You could definitely do it more serious than we're doing it.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think as far as the seriousness in Lord of the Rings, you could subvert that in Havoc Brigade.
Mm-hmm. I thinking what I'm going to end up with is something more like the webcomic DM of the Rings.
Probably. Probably.
But that's okay.
That's the goal, almost.
Right.
But, yeah, but, it's... go ahead.
So... Yeah, the sort of a diversion, but off of the point that, yes, to a certain point, you can have just action and it be fun. However, I don't think playing Havoc Brigade over and over again for 4-hour sessions every other week would be fun for very long.
Well, and I'll say this, it's all meat, no potatoes, right? There's no substance to it. It's a lot of fun, and it's really good fun, and it's great while it lasted. But boy, if it lasts any longer, it's not. There's nothing there. There's nothing to hold it up. And that's where intrigue really comes in, is that if you want a story to hold up, if you want a story to be substantive in any way, you have to have some form of intrigue in some way or another. Mm-hmm. Even arguably in Havoc Brigade, even though set pieces are, or even though, you know, everything is a big action set piece, there is a little bit of intrigue of, like, the town's guard are catching on to us to try and figure out what's going on here, and there's noise being made, and there's, you know what I mean? Like, there is some intrigue in that, like, where the story's heading is, it may not have a lot of it, but it does have some.
Fair.
And the... Again, I think the main crux of everything is that substance, flair over substance in tabletop RPGs works, but doesn't stick. And substance over flair works, but doesn't. It works, but is boring, right?
Well, can I take this to one of your favorite parallels to gaming?
Go for it.
Professional wrestling.
Okay.
You have someone like, and I'm not the biggest wrestling fan, so if I'm getting things wrong, anyone out there in listener land, I'm sorry. But I'm going to say someone like a Bill Goldberg.
Okay.
Goldberg was a phenomenon when he came up, but Goldberg really didn't have much of a shtick. He was a hell of an athlete. He was a good physical performer.
2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay.
So anyways, you were talking about Goldberg being much of an athlete, but not much of a performer.
Yeah, like right. He didn't have, other than just being kind of a maniac, he didn't have a lot of, you know, camera charisma as opposed to, and I'll just point to someone who I didn't see much of early in their career. Most of my exposure to them was, you know, past their physical prime, but someone like a Ric Flair,
who
may not have had the physical talents of a Bill Goldberg, but had the charisma and the swagger and the showmanship to sustain himself much longer in that business because of that, even though, you know, physically he wasn't a match.
Okay, so I'll say a couple things, and just to stop the comments. First off, yes, I agree with you. However, Ric Flair does have a lot of physical talents. Just compared to the size of Goldberg, he is not as physically daunting, and I agree with you on that. Secondly, that's why managers exist in wrestling. So that idea of somebody who is talented but terrible on the mic, or talented but has no persona, that's why people like Paul Heyman exist, because Paul Heyman can come out and talk for anyone and make them sound like they're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, if they were to get on the mic, somebody like, well, I don't know, Brock Lesnar, who's a current wrestler, or someone like I'm drawing a blank on any like former wrestlers that would be a good fit for that. But anybody who's not great on the mic, that's why wrestling managers exist, because they're there to pump up somebody who's doesn't have a good mic presence, or maybe they have a character that doesn't talk for a particular reason or another. And so I get where you're coming from. You either have a face or you have a body. And so the idea is that you're either the physical embodiment of wrestling, or you're the spoken embodiment of wrestling, essentially.
Well, I'm not trying to say, just to be clear, that Ric Flair was not a physically talented wrestler. I'm saying
most of my exposure to him came when
he was well past his physical prime, but right. He still had, to put it in the context of the action intrigue conversation, Goldberg was all action.
Right.
Ric Flair, you know, in his prime, I'm sure was very good at action and very good at the intrigue. As he, you know, aged, he still had the ability to do the intrigue, but it enabled him to keep going despite his action capacity coming down. And I know that's a really, really odd analogy, but
no, I understand where you're coming from. I get the logic behind it. It's just, you know, I just wanted to assuage some of the comments before they got to you, because I knew you weren't trying to be like, oh, well, Ric Flair has no physical abilities.
No.
I just wanted to get ahead of it before the wrestling fans. I love the wrestling community. Sometimes wrestling fans, you know who you are. You know who you are. You know you're out there. And I know that comment's going to pull them out of the woodwork, and they're all going to be like, what was Steve talking about? Like, mm-hmm.
Well, but this kind of goes to my point about the sustainability of action alone,
right?
Bill Goldberg had a brilliant short career in, what was it, the WCW at that point, I think.
It would have been, yeah.
Ric Flair wrestled for how many freaking years?
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, he started back when there wasn't even a W. Yeah, he started back when it was, you know, a handful of promoters in the South.
Yeah, and so where, like I said, this is where I think to craft a good, let's say, campaign, not necessarily adventure, you need to mix them.
Well, I definitely agree.
You're better off mixing them than trying to go one exclusive of the other.
I definitely agree. And I think for one shots, you can go to one extreme or the other. For, like you said, campaign play, anything that's longer than, we'll say, 3 or 4 sessions, you have to have a mix. You have to have anything that's longer than 3 sessions, you have to have a little bit of intrigue. Otherwise, you're going to lose your players. And we go back to that old conversation of player engagement. And player engagement is such a big thing in tabletop RPGs. If your players are not engaged, you're losing them. You're losing the battle. You're losing them at the table. They're not paying attention. They're not catching their turn. It's going to draw everybody out of the game. And then you're back to square one of, my players weren't engaged, so now here we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's crucial that your players stay engaged in the entire everything. And including some action, including some intrigue in your games is what keeps players engaged.
Oh, yeah. And I think, too, one thing that's been on my brain to mention about the action side of things is don't roll too much for your action.
No.
No.
Now let action be action.
Right. This is the complaint that you hear about the way a lot of D&D gets played is, roll for this, roll for that, roll for that, roll to open the damn door. No, right? Like, at some point, your action needs to move to be good action. And, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, don't roll unless failure is interesting, right? Like, to go back to that saying, you know, I think the first person I heard directly say it was GM Chris, but it's so true, which, again, is where Havoc Brigade is almost an exception, right? Because everything's interesting in Havoc Brigade. You guys have more fun when you screw up a roll.
Yeah, no, it's more entertaining to see how this goes wrong. And again, you're right. You're exactly on the point. Don't make your players roll when there's nothing that's going to be interesting happening. Right. In my D&D campaign, I have my players roll for very little unless they're like actively looking for something. If they're actively searching and being like, okay, where is this? Okay, you're now actively searching, give me a roll. But if they're like, I want to open that door. What's your passive strength? What's your strength number? What's the number? It's a 17. You're very strong. Mm-hmm. You can open that door with no issues. Or, you know, passive perception is a thing that exists in D&D. I have been very hard working at using the numbers that are presented on the sheet and not just ignoring half of them, right? Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, and especially in D&D, we ignore the numbers and look at the modifiers. We go, okay, well, I want to open that door, or I want to talk to that guy and try and convince him that blah, 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 blah. And will make you roll dice and be like, okay, we'll roll dice. Well, the fact of the matter is if I'm looking at that guy and I'm talking to him and I have an 18 in charisma and I roll a 1 on dice, it doesn't mean anything. I still have an incredibly high charisma and I should have a good chance of convincing him of whatever I want to convince him of. But I rolled a 1 on dice, so it doesn't matter now. So I've been just trying to play with that. But like, I agree with you that having substance to your roles makes roles feel like they have some weight to them. It makes you feel like I'm actually doing something, whereas not having any substance. Oh, I'm tired today. Not having any substance to those roles makes them feel pointless and like you're just rolling dice to hear the sound of dice roll.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think too, like I've noticed what's happened a few times with Havoc Brigade is that one of you guys will describe this plan of action in some sort of grandiose detail, you know, and then it's like, okay, well, I need you to roll. And then depending on the roll, I'll often ask, okay, so how did this go incredibly good? Or how did this go incredibly not so good? And that feels like it uses the roll. It provides, you know, some engagement and it just, everyone like feels like they're having fun because you know what you were intending. So when I ask you how it went wrong, you kind of, you're already thinking in that vein, I guess.
Exactly. Because you know, like I know for yourself, when somebody makes you roll dice that you're trying to do something with, you know all of the many scenarios how that dice roll can go wrong. You have a whole list of them in your head. And when the GM comes to you and goes, okay, you rolled, it failed, how does this go wrong? You now get to be like, oh, well, whereas instead of having somebody that would just describe it to you and tell you how it went wrong, you can now be like, oh, it went wrong because X, Y, and Z and Bob got in the way. And like, you know, who's Bob? Well, Bob's this guard, right? Like, and yeah, that's such a great engagement. That's such a great engagement on that side of things.
But I think the other thing with roles, right? You need some, right? Because let's be honest, most of us as players, we do like to roll dice. But I think in action sequences, dice rolling slows it down. And I think it's important to keep action moving as fast as you can.
I think my biggest thing that I've done to help action sequence move faster is putting people on deck. So I don't know where, I don't know when, but I discovered this idea of, especially in, let's say, D&D combat that's in turns, right? Combat that's in rounds, you're going, Steve, you're up, Joe, you're up next. And by going, Joe, you're up next, get your turn ready, be ready to go, he can be ready, and then the next person can get ready on his turn, right?
Right.
And you can have a really smooth flowing round of combats that don't get too hiccuped in the oh, well, do I want to do this or this or this or this? No, have your turn ready to go, because when I call on you, you're going to tell me what you're doing, you're going to roll your dice, we're going to move on to the next person, or we're going to move on to the NPC or whatever. And if you don't have that ready, I'm not going to sit there and be like, why didn't you have this ready? But I'm going to, you know, I put it on my players to make sure that they are ready to go when it's their turn, so they can keep the flow of everything moving, so we can get a big coherent story at the end, instead of, I don't know, we wasted 20 minutes in the middle because so-and-so had to take their turn. And it's, I just try to keep it on my players of like, okay, you're up next, you're after the NPC, right? Like, boom, boom, boom. Now in Genesis, that doesn't necessarily work because anybody can pop in at any order. But Genesis doesn't have that problem per se, because anybody can pop in any order. So instead of having somebody be like, oh, I'll take my turn, or, and then they have to think about it, they pretty much know what they're doing because they're choosing to take their turn when they chose to take their turn.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one of the things that system does, is it actually requires a much more constant engagement, but you feel like you get something from it.
Right, right. And having that active initiative system really helps. And I really give Genesis a lot of credit for that. Among other things, I really like that system. I'm just sort of tired of playing it. We played a lot of Genesis for a long time.
I have a weird relationship with it. I really like it, but there are elements to it that I'm not as satisfied with as I could be. Let's put it that way.
I don't think
it's a design flaw. It's just a fact of how the game works. And I think some of the elements that I really like, you can't have without some of the side effects that I'm not as fond of.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's a whole nother discussion for another sometime.
Yeah. I just, what's their next thought, Steve?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I think, you know, the biggest thing I think with your action in a game is, like I said, you keep it moving. And when I say go as fast as you can, I don't mean try to go as fast as is possible. I mean, go as fast as the steps you need to use to keep it interesting let you. You know what I mean? You're going to need to make some rolls that are going to slow some things down. You need to do that. But like you said, what you don't want is that 20-minute pause while someone figures out whatever. Other than that,
it's go as fast as you can make it comfortable.
And I think too, just make it dynamic, right? Like, running a gauntlet is fun, but if all you do is run gauntlets, it, yeah, you know, you need to change it up and, you know, not do the same thing every time, I guess is what I'm saying. Does that, do you get where I'm going? Because my brain is not outputting effectively at the moment.
I get running.
Like maybe it's a chase, maybe it's a fight, maybe it's, you know, almost falling off a cliff, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, right? Like, vary it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And right, don't be afraid to make it change in the middle. You know, it's a fight, and now you're also trying to not fall off a cliff.
Exactly. It's a fight, and now you're also trying not to slip and fall off a cliff or slip it, or, you know, and yes.
You know what I mean? Like mix it up, because, you know, again, like we talked about last week, the same thing over and over again loses its impact. You just become desensitized. You know, it's like, how often do you really pay attention to anyone's car alarm going off anymore?
Yeah, and that used to be something that I would just say like nothing.
You know, now, because, hell, the other day I was putting gas in the car and I had the remote in my pocket and I apparently bumped the frickin' button with something that was in my pocket and it starts going off. So I have to fish the keys out of my pocket, shut it off. Meanwhile, I'm standing at the gas station.
Yeah, and it's, well, we become, so something I've run into while making soap, we become nose blind to certain things, right? You have to have a palate cleanser. Otherwise, you're not going to notice, you're going to lose the forest through the trees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to lose the trees to the forest in a way, if that makes sense. You're going to focus on the bigger picture and not the details anymore. And it happens with people at work. It happens with people in real life. You know, man, how many times have you been driving home from work and like completely zoned out and then realized you were home?
Yes.
I do that.
Oh yeah.
I do that. Like, I'll be driving somewhere and be like, thinking about other things. And then next thing I know, I'm there. I'm like, what happened? How did I teleport?
Yeah, really.
And that's terrifying to some people because,
well, it's a little disturbing, you know, at times, like, especially I've had it, you know, like when I used to work second shift and I'd be driving home and the route I take is notoriously heavy with fog at times.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be like, okay, well, there's that road sign that's lit up. I don't remember the one at this point, and I'm now past that.
Did I just run that red light? Did I just run that red light? Oh, man. Or, you know, the even more scary part is when something happens on your mindless commute. I was driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike to a job at one point, and it was, I don't know, it wasn't bad weather or anything, but I was passing a semi-truck, which I had done. You know, I pass semi-trucks all the time because they're going slower. We're going up a hill. The car can go up the hill faster than the semi-truck. It's just a matter of fact. Passing the semi-truck, and the truck didn't see me. I was in his sort of blind spot right where the trailer is, and he started coming over on me. But that'll snap you out of a that'll snap you out of a trance like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or, you know, the time I had somebody come into oncoming traffic at me. I was like, whoa, what's going on? You know, it just snaps you out of it. And sometimes using that, and that can be an action set piece, or that can be a narrative piece to snap somebody out of that trance, especially in a long play campaign. That's good. That's a good thing to use.
Well, that's like, I know I mentioned it last week, right? You're setting up that something's off, and right as they're getting a handle on there's something that's off, but before they figure out what it is, you slap them with an action thing that needs their attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, that's a very generic description, but that's kind of what we're talking about, right? You know, not so much deliberately keeping them off balance, but in a sense, not letting them get too balanced, because then everything loses its impact.
It's blowing on someone on a tightrope, right? They're up there, they're balanced, they're holding on, they're doing the best they can. Somebody comes along and just goes, and now they're falling, right? Immediately. And mm-hmm. And that is that little gust of air, that little just act of doing that can just throw your players off and can add a little bit of intrigue, can add a little twist to a situation, can change the way we're looking at things, right? Like, it's crucial that you use and subvues your players as appropriate, right? You have to be able to throw them off, get them into sort of, it's familiar but not, right?
Well, I mean, to paraphrase an old saying, familiarity breeds, and I just lost the word out. Yes, that actually was the word I was looking for. Thank you. Yeah, familiarity breeds complacency. And complacency is the opposite of engagement, effectively.
Yeah, if you have a complacent table, you don't have an engaged table, and I'm sorry. And if you have a non-complacent table, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have an engaged table either. That just means that they're just not putting up with it no more.
Right. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, what else can you think of around action other than, like I said, I think the key is to kind of balance the two. And you can definitely favor one over the other depending on where you're going with a game. And there may be games out there that work fine as almost all intrigue. I think the balance swings. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was in my opinion, for whatever that's worth or not worth to anyone, I think it's more effective. Okay. I'm trying to think how to say this. I think if I have to pick between a game that is almost all intrigue and minimal action versus a game that is almost all action and minimal intrigue, I'm going to be much happier with the more intrigue heavy option. That said, closer to the middle, the better, probably, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I definitely agree that I want something a little bit more down the middle and not so much both ends of the spectrum, although I respect and enjoy both ends of the spectrum. When I want something that I'm playing weekly, monthly, regular basis that I'm invested in, I want something that's got a lot of intrigue, a lot of action, and got a nice balance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And striking that balance is finding the balance that works for you and works for your table is going to be completely, completely subjective.
Mm-hmm.
There is no objective facts to what balance to hit when it comes to action over intrigue. And it's all because everybody prefers something different. You might have a group of players that is absolutely invested in intrigue and enjoys some action on occasion, but is here for the story, is here for the investment, is here for the, you know, mystery of it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That's fantastic. That table is going to lean more towards intrigue. You're going to throw in action as a nice little break, and you're going to keep it mostly intriguing. In the inverse, you might have a table that is a strict group of they just want action. They just want big set pieces. They just want exploding cars. They want, you know, ridiculousness. Great. That's fantastic. Do what you got to do. And if they want that action, throw them action.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, I agree. It is going to vary by player and by table and everything else. So
yeah, it's all up to your players. I'm not sure what else there
is to say on that.
I don't think there is much. And I think with all that being said, we move into game of the week.
Woohoo! Game of the week.
Game of the week. Game of the week.
All right. I got one.
All right. What do you got?
I have a game called The Tower and the Garden.
Okay.
And it is run off of Forged in the Dark. And I'm sending you a link here in 2 seconds. Boop, boop. The Tower and the Garden is a cyber metal tabletop RPG.
Not so what I was guessing from that title.
Yeah, that's not what I was guessing from the title either, but it's about surviving in a refugee city, the Garden, in the shadow of an exclusionary fortress, the Tower, You protect the people. You'll play as cyborgs, mech pilots, magic wielders, rabble rousers pitted against various factions, all vying for control over the garden. Demon lords, criminal enterprises, cultists, and corporate-sponsored fascists.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the things. It's all the things that I like, and it's also got a really cool art style, which I respect. I like this, like, there was that Matt Damon, is it Matt Damon? What was that movie where he's got the, is that Elysium is the name of the movie?
Have not seen it.
No, still not drawn it. Okay. The idea was that he, like, basically work and area, and like, it's one of those kind of movies. It's a really, okay. I really enjoy Elysium. But yeah, it's Matt Damon. He's got a mech suit. It's a sci-fi future type movie. It's kind of a crazy movie, but yeah, it's that kind of idea where the rich have secluded themselves in an area and the poors are left to fight for their own. And yeah, $11.99 drive-through RPG.
Sounds interesting. Setting sounds really neat.
Yeah, and set in you know, using the rule system forged in the dark, which is a great rule system. I you know, hey, something to check out.
Yep. Okay, sorry, I'm trying to write here and...
No, you're fine.
All right, so I have one that actually kind of dovetails into yours a little bit, I think. And I don't know, maybe we brought this up a while ago. I don't remember it, but the name sounds vaguely familiar. I've just sent you a link in a green room. It's called, I think it's called the Gaia Complex is how I'd pronounce it. Okay. It is... it's about 2 years old, so a little more than two, actually. No, wait, this is 20, yeah, 2.5. It's a cyberpunk game. It's apparently an original system. but anyway, it's a cyberpunk game set in what they're calling New Europe, which is a single sprawling metropolis that covers much of what is currently known as mainland Europe. It's set in the year 2119. There was a Third World War. I think there's like 12 giant metropolises in the world now, but they're all isolated because of fallout from the war and whatnot. So it's basically a giant mega city cyberpunk, but there's vampires.
Mm-hmm.
It actually looks really cool. There's a the game itself will set you back 19 and change for the PDF. But there is also a quick start, which is free, and I downloaded it, and the art is really cool. And the storyline, like the info on the setting, so yeah, toward the end of the 21st century, there was a Third World War, became known as Resource War. You know, small pockets survived the war, forming 11 metropolises, which have managed to grow and prosper on account of development, blah, 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 blah. And it's now... basically, New Europe, which is this big city that is kind of the center of the game, is run by an overzealous AI known as Gaia.
Hmm.
So, like I say, it sounds really intriguing.
Yeah, that's definitely something. It's going on the radar and definitely something I'm going to check out here shortly because I've been looking for a game like this.
I downloaded the Quick Start because it's free. And it talked a little bit about the system. I didn't get a chance to read it because I downloaded it right before we started, but it works on D12s and D3.
Hmm.
So, I mean, in my opinion, I like things that use D12s and D3s are easy enough to fudge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easy enough to do a D3. So,
yeah. But like I said, it looks really cool. The art, you know, like the images are very neat, very, you know, cyberpunk. And to a certain point, I actually kind of really like the idea of mega city cyberpunk, you know, as much as I love the classic Artalsorian setting as well.
Yeah, there's something about mega city cyberpunk that's just cuts to the core of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very cool. Well, as always, links to everything are in the show notes. Discord, Patreon. If you can't join the Patreon, come join us on Discord. If you feel like throwing us a couple bucks on Patreon, good on you. You'll get some cool content out of that and also the exclusive dibs of saying you're on the Me and Steve Patreon.
thank yous in the show notes, that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, Gamer Nation Con, we reminded everyone of that at the top of the show. That's coming up soon. PGX, again, coming up in October. Cool stuff happening there. And yeah, as always, we want to remind everyone to be kind to one another and get out there and play some RPGs.
Yep, take care, y'all.
Intro and outro music by the band 12 Noon. You can email us at meandsteverpg@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at andrpgs. Find us on Facebook at meandsteverpgpodcast. On Discord at meandsteverpgs. And as always, all of these links are in the show notes. Thank you, and be kind to one another.
How much for the cigar?
Cigar, $20, dog. You gotta go down the street to the store and buy that.